Welcome to the Information Security Forum podcast. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert, and I'm here with ISF Managing Director Steve Durbin. Today, we're discussing accepting the inevitability of security breaches, learning from those breaches, the importance of emotional intelligence for CISOs, and more. Steve, given the speed of change in cyber, do you believe that a CEO should be encouraging innovative, out-of-the-box thinking from their CIO or CISO?
I think so. I think it's all too easy these days to perhaps restrict because we're concerned about the impact of a breach or a hack. And that can stifle, I think, the way in which organizations might want to develop and indeed take advantage of operating in cyberspace across the enterprise and indeed across their whole corporate landscape. That doesn't mean to say, of course, that we should go about doing things without thinking them through. And for me, the key to all of this, whether you adopt a highly innovative approach or not, is that you engage right at the beginning with your technology experts. That will include the CIO, that will include, of course, the Chief Information Security Officer too, because what you're trying to do is to ensure that whatever you do get up to, you're protecting the integrity and the confidentiality and, of course, the availability of the information, the data that you're making use of. So they have a key role to play, I think, in really ensuring that whatever innovation you're encouraging across the enterprise is done with security built in at the outset rather than trying to retrofit it once you've discovered that something doesn't work. So I don't think that some of the changes that we're seeing, some of the breaches that we're seeing should really be stifling innovation. I would hate to think that. I would hope, however, that they are causing people just to think through some of the more intricate elements of how do we ensure security is built into that innovation to avoid some of the pitfalls.
I like that you talk about the inevitability of a breach and the responsibility to prepare for it. And now this is a new idea to me that nobody wants a breach, but it can spur positive thinking, new creative ways of dealing with it. That's something I'm not sure companies are thinking about.
No, I'd agree with you. I think we're seeing a maturing of the industry. I think if we look back even just a short while, there was this approach that said, you know, we're trying to avoid a breach taking place at all costs. I think that game is lost. Mm-hmm. At some point in the future, every organization will suffer a breach. The issue is not if, but when. The issue is not the damage that it will incur, but how you can limit that damage and how you can recover from it. So I think that then changes your whole thinking. Mm-hmm. And for me anyway, that breach is probably a learning process. Now, of course, you're going to have to go through a recovery period. You're going to have to recognize that will impact some of the things that perhaps you would want to do from a business direction standpoint. But I think it does give you an opportunity both at the planning for the breach stage and when you're in that environment to be able to learn from it. And that, I think, ultimately is probably a good thing. And that may sound strange to some people listening to this, that, you know, you can take positives away from it. But I think that it's a somewhat unique opportunity. And I would also like to see us get to the point where we begin to recognize that CISOs who have been through a breach are not damaged. Mm-hmm. You know, they do actually have somewhat unique experience mm-hmm. on how to respond to some of these things going forward. And I think all too often we get into this blame culture and finger pointing and tend to shoot the CISO. Very often it isn't his or her fault. You know, we knew that this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to see us moving towards, as I say, a much greater maturity in that space and actually embracing the opportunity that exists to learn from some of these breaches and some mm-hmm. of the experience that the individuals who've been involved in that can then bring to the enterprise.
Are you implying then that a CISO who has been through a breach might be even more valuable to an organization than a CISO who has never dealt with that?
I think they have some unique insights that they can then bring to the operation, to the enterprise, to the learning that you necessarily need to go through. That's not to say, of course, that you know, people who haven't been through that process don't have some of that, but you won't have that frontline experience. And that for me, I think, is going to be increasingly valuable. Again, I say, you know, some people listening to this may well disagree with that, but I do think that we haven't taken enough advantage of what we can learn from some of the individuals who've been through a breach process, both at the corporate level and also perhaps more importantly at the individual level. Because I think, again, you know, when we talk about breaches and loss of data and so on, we tend to focus on the enterprise and indeed perhaps the customer. But it also impacts the individuals within the organization as well. It can have an adverse impact on innovation. We were just talking about that. It can have an adverse impact on, you know, how people actually go about doing their daily jobs. And again, it's about switching that, flipping it, and taking some of the positive elements from it and using it from an educational standpoint, from a training standpoint, because you get some real life experience. And I think that all too often when we look at, you know, the recovery process and when we run cyber simulation exercises and so on, we lose sight of the fact that there is a very significant amount of education and learning that we can then pick up and apply to the enterprise to put us in a better shape. Mm-hmm. And indeed, other organizations can learn from that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're talking about there is culture, and I want to come back and ask you more about culture within an organization. But let's keep on this track of talking about the individual in an organization. To what extent does security come down to an individual and the daily choices that they're making? And what do organizations need to do to change any behaviors that are not ideal?
The individual, for me anyway, is where it all begins and ends across the enterprise. You know, the days of being able to have a command and control approach to the way in which data is being accessed, used, stored are gone. We can produce guidelines, we can try to enforce some of those, but ultimately the power has shifted to the end user. So I want to be able to access all of my corporate systems from my smartphone. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do it on the move. I want to be able to do it from environments that are perhaps not ideal. So a coffee shop, mm-hmm. An airport. And we all know that those environments, you know, the Wi-Fi networks are just not safe.
Right.
But that doesn't stop us doing it. And so I think that we have to adapt from a security standpoint to really look at the way in which our users are going to be behaving and then put in place certainly some guidelines for them, but also to make use of some technology that can make life a little bit easier and increase the security. So virtual private networks, for instance, mm-hmm. would be one thing that springs to mind. Multi-factor authentication would be another thing that immediately springs to mind in terms of some of the access. Not always popular with end users. Mm-hmm. But again, the challenge from an IT and a security standpoint is to make it as seamless and as easy as possible whilst maintaining that level of security that's necessary for the organization. And also explaining it. So it isn't just about, you know, this is what you need to do because mm-hmm. we say so and because this is the policy.
Right.
It's because the impact of not doing it on you as an individual is going to be this. And I think that in our user education, in our working with business departments and business leaders, we need to be adopting much more of an explanatory approach to why we have certain security things in place. And we need to be relating that back to the way in which not just the individual, but business leaders in particular, are going about running departments and doing their jobs. Because if all we're doing is providing security for the sake of security, then we really might as well pack up and go home. Mm-hmm. There really is no point. However, relating it and explaining that actually by applying certain security measures, we can improve the user experience, increase the security around the data, the access points, and that in turn then helps with some of the way in which the business wishes to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And drawing some of those lines of explanation, I think, is the way to go. And we're going to have to keep doing that because, as I say, the end user is now king in this particular space.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the challenge from the security and an IT perspective is to adapt very quickly to the way in which the end user is using technology and, in fact, is demanding the level of support, of access that they've come to expect.
Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a tricky place for a CISO to be, I would imagine. One who has an extremely nuanced understanding of technology, who's responsible for educating a workforce with a broad understanding of technology. So it takes me back to what you often say, that those soft skills, the emotional intelligence, the non-quantifiable or unquantifiable abilities are so important for someone to imagine that other people don't know all that they hold in their brain and how to communicate that effectively. That seems important if you're talking about how vital education is from top down.
Yeah, it is. Now, I think if you look at it from an overall workforce standpoint, so we just finished a piece of research in this particular space, and we found that 20% of people operating within a security environment don't have any IT background. So they've come from different parts mm-hmm. of an organization. I would say that's too low. I would say it needs to be much higher than that. And, you know, your point about emotional intelligence and soft skills is very well made. I think that increasingly we can teach some of the technical expertise that is required. But if we're going to be able to do two things, first of all, combat some of the skill shortage that we've got in security, and also be better equipped to deal with the end user, as we've just been talking about, mm-hmm. then we need to be hiring into that space people with much more highly developed skills in emotional intelligence, social soft skills, sales skills, marketing skills, you know, educational mm-hmm. capability, that kind of thing. Because that really is where the challenge lies. If we can't constrain our users, and I'm not saying
which
we should,
can't,
and we can't, we know right. we can't, then we have to find another way of doing it. And if you think that one through, you know, let's take a marketing individual or a sales individual, for instance. Their daily job is all about trying to persuade people, trying to convey mm-hmm. a message in mm-hmm. an acceptable way. Very high in terms of emotional intelligence and being able to understand how the message is being received, being able to change some of the phraseology around it, perhaps, being able to change some of the way in which the person who's receiving the messages might be motivated. So those are all the sorts of skills that we need to start to bring into the security function, in addition to some of the technical pieces as well. But I don't see any other way that we're going to be able to provide a high level of service, both back into the enterprise and indeed to the end user, unless we begin to work on those areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about culture. How can a risk-averse culture impact cybersecurity? And can a company really get ahead if they're promoting that kind of risk-averse culture? Does it stifle innovation and growth?
Risk aversion is an interesting one, you know, because different organizations will define it in different ways. We will all have a view on our risk appetite. Some organizations will break that down even further. They will have a risk appetite in different regions. For instance, they may have it in different departments or business lines. Some will have one risk appetite globally for their organization. So risk aversion, you know, when we look at that, has to always be viewed within the context of what the business is trying to achieve. And I think there is always a very real danger when we get into this sort of area of security or IT stripping away the business from what they're looking to do. And for me anyway, if you're trying to grow a business and you're trying to increase shareholder value and deliver more service and product to your customer base and provide an environment that really does encourage employees to stay with you and to learn and develop, then you have to have aligned all of the different components across mm-hmm. the business. So risk aversion for me starts in the boardroom. It starts with the business. It starts with the strategy of the organization. And then we begin to look from there as to what we need in order to enable and indeed to deliver on those strategic objectives, some of which will be people related, some of which will be technology related, all of which will have some security component in there. And that, again, I think from a boardroom thinking standpoint is very different. Not that long ago, I used to do a lot of merger and acquisition work. Rarely did I ever look at security. It was something that was it just didn't appear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you would be really remiss not to be considering some of the cybersecurity implications.
Irresponsible.
In that space. A lot of people still don't, by the way. But that really, you know, is a marked change in what's going on. So it starts there. And then we begin to build out what the different implications might be. There may be cost implications. There may be resource implications. If you're moving into a new region, for instance, there may be infrastructure-based challenges that you face. But I think that it's adopting that somewhat holistic approach that really sort of says, okay, you know, I have a number of different skills across my team, and driving this business forward along the lines that we've just outlined is going to require that they all collaborate and work effectively together. So how can I best go about doing that? And that's where we begin to see the role of the CEO, because the role of the CEO is in pulling that all together. It's about helping to educate the board, making sure that the people within the enterprise understand the team game they need to be playing, and then making sure that everybody across the individual departments is also aligned with that, right down to the end user, the individual who needs to be delivering on it. So it's a very much more complex and integrated approach, I think, than we have seen in the past, mm-hmm. where, you know, IT perhaps or security is a separate function mm-hmm. that provides a service.
You That's know, very tacked often on.
That is tagged on.
Right.
You know, and let's produce some KPIs around it, and let's measure whether or not we're actually getting the value from them. for me, that's old thinking. You know, mm-hmm. we need to move into a space where they are completely integrated into the business and everybody understands the implication of not involving them. We're not there yet.
Thank you, Steve. It's been really helpful to hear your thoughts on soft skills for CISOs, risk aversion, and how this industry continues to mature and evolve in the way it views security breaches. For more resources for CISOs, CEOs, and anyone looking to enhance the security of their business, please visit securityforum.org. And listeners, we'd like to hear from you, and we'd also really appreciate it if you would rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Get in touch if there's a topic you'd like us to cover or anyone you'd like us to interview. You can reach us through our website, or you can always tweet us at Security Forum. Thanks so much for listening.